It's the best, hands down.
It's crystal clear.
I love it. The things you can make are awesome.
No one else has quality epoxy like this.
It's easy to mix.
Tim is such a wealth of knowledge.
It's gotta be iCoat.
Welcome to the Resin Mastery Podcast, exploring iCoat epoxy.
So welcome back to Resin Mastery, exploring iCoat epoxy. Today we have an amazing interview with Bupp Woodworks and Design, and I'm actually joined by Tina Bupp. They're based up in Illinois, and it's about an hour north of Chicago. Is that where it is, Tina?
Yep. Yeah, we're about an hour north of Chicago, hour south of Milwaukee.
In McHenry, Illinois.
Yeah, it's a small town, yes.
Yeah, good old Irish name, you know. And Tina and her husband have been involved in live edge, in flower preservation, in using epoxy to create the most incredible artistic things that we've actually, through iCoat, had the pleasure of showing people. Tina, before we start, just introduce yourself to the audience.
I'm Tina. I've been doing this since, I think, about 2018. We started out with making tables, and then I kind of slowly preserved flowers, and then it just kind of exploded after that. And now we have our own little business. So
did you start doing this yourself, or was this something your husband started first, or did you both start together doing this? Because I know it's a husband-wife organization and growing at the moment, yeah. Right?
He's always been into like building construction. He used to build cabinets, but he was very intrigued by making the river tables. That was probably in like 2018 is when we made our first one. And I helped with the resin part because, you know, he wasn't doing it correctly. So I'm like, I'll help you out. And so we made a few tables, and I then realized there's tons of different types of resin. You know, there's the deep pour, there's art resin, there's casting. And so I kind of experimented with different ones. And then I did a lot of like ocean art type stuff, and then kind of played around with flowers from my garden. So I really liked the resin part of it, and he did more of like the woodworking part. It started out with tables and just kind of branched out from there.
You know, I've been involved with iCoat going back to 2013 when Tim and I first met. But the crazy part is, since I've been introduced to Live Edge, the river tables, and all the preservation work, especially with the tables, I've never met, honestly, one person who I've ever shown one of these tables to, whether it's a pick or a live table, that hasn't been absolutely blown away by it.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, and it's almost something that's even freakier, which is so many of them say, I've never seen those before.
Yeah, awesome. That's what I like to hear. Yeah, I love incorporating the flowers in the tables and the wood trays. That's something that we came up with a few years ago. You know, he's like, you know, we're making these tables. Why don't you just throw some of your flowers in there? It'd look cool with the wood. And then we made sample pieces, and then people have been like begging for them ever since. So it's probably definitely one of my favorite things to make, because it's a unique item that we offer, and it's something we can both work on together. You know, I do the flowers and resin, and then it goes to him. He has to sand and polish it for hours in the garage. So yeah, I definitely like making those. We have people from all over the country sending flowers to us to make the tables and trays. So,
well, we are a happy hour family, which means maybe too many nights a week, right? We do happy hour. And there's always like, you know, a charcuterie board of cheeses and meats, and sometimes big, sometimes small. Especially Friday, we get quite a few people together, wine, you know, cheese, beer. And it's just a great communing. Having one of those boards that's designed is the talk of the, anyone who's new, that's all they talk about.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's just a conversation piece, you know?
Oh, it is. And especially if you add in memory pieces in there, right? Which could be your kids. It could be wedding flowers. It could be, you know, whatever it is, memorial for somebody. it adds that extra element of customization, art, and it just is a conversation piece absolutely to the max. So tell us a little about some of the favorite things you have to make. I know you just mentioned a minute ago you love making tables. I've seen, and you sent us pictures maybe a few years ago, some amazing ocean, they were like ocean coasters. Do you still make a lot of those? And is there anything else that's like top of the list to be made?
Those actually started out as memorial pieces. My neighbor came up with the idea. She had ashes from her husband, and she wanted like an ocean, like ring dish, I guess, like jewelry dish. And so we mixed the ashes in the sand and made like a little ocean scene. And that became really popular a few years ago. I don't make them so much anymore. I don't really do the ocean art just because I don't have room to make so many different things. But yeah, it's fun to make, but it's also sad because you're working with people's ashes, but they definitely appreciate that piece of art. You know, people came back to me very grateful that I made that for them.
So my wife has had a picture of her father up for nearly 2 years now from his passing. I imagine when you make a memorial piece, which incorporates pictures of loved ones who've passed away, flowers, and something beautiful that they can display on a mantelpiece or keep somewhere, that's probably such a touching piece that is forever talked about. Do you do a lot of those memorial pieces as well as obviously wedding flower preservation?
Yeah, I actually started out doing memorials first, just like locally with people, because I was just, you know, I was posting stuff I made as a hobby on the side. I was selling on Etsy, and people saw what I made and they're like, hey, you know, someone passed, can you preserve this rose for me or whatever? So I started making that. Yeah, it's very sentimental. And sometimes it's hard to work with. I don't like when they like tell me the stories of what happened to, you know, because sometimes it's, you know, very tragic stories. But yeah, we do quite a few memorials. Right now it's been mostly weddings, but we still get, you know, several memorials a month probably for people.
Right. You've actually got a pretty impressive social media following as well. And you cover a lot of bases with that. And you mentioned Etsy. It's interesting because whenever something becomes popular in the States, you know how it's actually crossed that chasm of success when it's copied a million times by the Chinese or the Filipinos or whoever in Asia can put together a factory of thousands of people just making things. Yeah. And you get a lot of those items that flood the US market. One thing I always worry about, and Tim's the expert in this, I'm not, but he knows it inside out. And I always asked him, would you use one of those charcuterie boards? And he was like, maybe not. He said, because you don't know, they don't adhere to lead platinum standards like we do. And a lot of American poxies do. And especially there's a big movement in the States at the moment about plastic leaching into people's bodies. Even I saw an article the other day on chewing gum.
Oh, wow.
That it's actually got microplastics in it. So people who chew a lot of chewing gum, it's like, wow. It always worries me about, is epoxy food grade and food safe? And only certain ones actually are. And those others will come in with a warning, but the finished pieces don't, which is kind of disturbing. So I think for people listening who are buying them, going to people like, you know, Bot Woodworks and Design is probably a better place to get something that you're going to use as a charcuterie board, something you're going to put food on, rather than, you know, just buying something like off Etsy. So,
and yeah, that's definitely why I stuck with iCoat, was because they were food safe and American made, and I could follow their standards, because you have no idea how many companies from China and other countries were sending me low grade resin. And I'm like, I'm not even touching this. So So yes, it's very, always get, you know, a food grade, safe, non-toxic, if you're going to put food on it.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And especially if you're working with it within a closed room, and you probably want a closed room, because if you're not, you're going to get flies and gnats and dust. And therefore, you don't want it to have a lot of odor as well, because you've got to be in there all day. And if you're not wearing a respirator the whole time, you at least want to know that it's not having any harmful effects on you. So you said you started this in 2018. When did you get introduced to TIM?
I'm trying to remember. It was probably like 2019. I know it was right before the pandemic, because I was posting in resin groups, just showing people what I was making. And at that time, I was kind of like helping people out, because there weren't a lot of people who knew what they were doing, and there weren't a lot of people to help them. And it was just a hobby at that time. But I was posting in a group, and then Tim reached out and he's like, hey, you know, I see you're doing flowers. I came up with a new resin for casting if you want to try it out. And then he sent me some samples of that and the art resin, because I was making the ocean art type stuff. So yeah, we went through one of the groups, and then I might have been one of like his first affiliates too. And you know, I was trying out all his new products and kind of giving him feedback with that. So
yeah, and thank you for that as well. I know he's very protective of not making everybody an affiliate, because obviously the goal of an affiliate is to turn people onto it. And I actually did notice, because I was searching for a note from you earlier, and I saw your name come up in a bunch of different CRM emails, and they were affiliates who said you'd referred them. So thank you for that as well. Yes. So when did this, you say you started this as a hobby. When did it go from a hobby to being, wow, we can actually pay our bills doing this?
Oh my gosh. That was so stressful.
Oh, I bet.
So yeah, it was definitely a hobby. My husband was working full-time building cabinets or doing electric. You know, I had a part-time job and two kids at home. So yeah, it was just a hobby at first. But then we had, you know, several videos go viral online. We had something on Pinterest, like our first flower table we actually posted like 4 or 5 years ago, that like went viral on Pinterest. And it just kind of exploded. It wasn't overnight, but it was probably over the course of several months. I just kept getting more and more orders. And I was just working out of like a small, our extra bedroom. Our kids were sharing a room because they were small then. But once, you know, the orders started taking over the bedroom, and then it took over our laundry room. And then we were in the kitchen, and then our office was in the kitchen, and then in the garage there was stuff. And it's like, we can't like function in this house with, you know, resin and orders and just stacks of flowers everywhere. So eventually we were like, we need to, you know, buy a building to work out of. And it's a lot nicer, because then we have a lobby where we can meet with customers, and they're not like meeting you randomly in your driveway.
Right.
It's definitely a way better flow here, but it was definitely hard transitioning to full time. It actually kind of worked out during the pandemic, because the job I was at was closing. So that's why I'm like, I guess we're gonna go in this kind of full force. And then I became so busy, I told my husband, I'm like, we either need to hire like an assistant and daycare, or you quit your job and you work for me. So he ended up doing that and working for me. So he's, you know, he helps me with some like admin work. He does packaging and shipping, and then he does all the woodworking. He'll help like sand and polish, you know, any blemishes and stuff like that. So yeah, it's probably, we've had this building for 2 years now, but probably for like a year or two before that, I was like full time in the house, but it was definitely taking over our house, and we're like, no more. My kids want their own rooms, and, you know, and I don't want to have, you know, resin in the house either too. Cause like all over my floor, I didn't put good plastic down. So any drips, there's like drips of resin hardened all over our hardwood floors and stuff. And it's just like, whoops, but we'll fix that one day. So
one day, exactly. Well, it's an amazing journey when you see people build businesses, and it's an amazing act of bravery, because I always will meet people, maybe through our church or just in casual conversation, who talk about people with successful businesses as if they just fell into it. Mm-hmm. But it's those stories of 24-hour days,
yeah,
and, you know, living on top of your work, not having that separation. You never go home. You're, yeah, always at work. Phone, yeah, ringing 24/7. So I have such high admiration for people who have done that, because it is such a challenge. So congratulations on that. So
it's definitely a challenge to work with your spouse also. So
oh, I was going to say, I didn't want to touch that one, but it was like,
been fired a few times, but then he always has to come back and help. So
that's right. Okay. There you go. Exactly. And I know you mentioned earlier that, in our pre-conversation, that you are even looking at hiring even more staff as well as you're growing.
Yeah, I've been looking for a while, basically someone to like photograph my items, do the social media part of it, because as soon as I'm done, you know, working at the shop, then I have to go home, take product photos, edit them, you know, try and create content. And it's just exhausting. I'm so burnt out from it, 'cause I've been doing it for years. Even at my previous job, I did the social media for that too. So it's just, it's so creatively draining. I want to focus more on making the items for people and not having to worry about it after that. So we're in the process of hiring a social media marketing type of person. And eventually I'm hoping that'll bring in, you know, more consistent clients so that I can hire, you know, an assistant to help me in the back, you know, processing flowers, yep, and stuff like that. So
yeah, it's one of those things, you take, and I've noticed this, you take amazing photos of your work. And I think for all the listeners out there who are looking to do what people like Tina are doing, it isn't just about being good at the preservation side and getting the flowers ready and get the right molds and picking everything and the environment, the temperature, the humidity, so much to it. But is then once that's done, like you said, you go to your fifth job, which, yeah, is social media and photographer and content editor. And that, but that's actually is really important. I think that people don't put enough weight on that, because when you take great photos of great handmade pieces, now you're able to show the world what it actually is.
Yeah, that's why I always wait till it's a nice sunny day and I do all my photos at home outside, because I want to show them, like, hold this up to the sky. It is crystal clear. There might be a couple of tiny blemishes, but, you know, it's not full of bubbles. There's, you know, I want to show them the quality that I'm putting into each piece. So I, like, me and my husband would get in arguments because he would take indoor photos and then I would take outdoor photos. And I'm like, look at the comparison. Like, this one's super bright and you can see all the details, and this one, you know, isn't, you know, it looks more muted. So yeah, photography is definitely important to show them your quality of work. So I follow a lot of other artists and it's like, I know you're doing a good job, I just can't tell because of the way you're taking photos. You know, it's, there's shadows or reflections and you can't, you know, see, you know, really close up and stuff on there. So yeah, I always try and do close up shots so you can see the quality, and then in the bright sun always definitely helps.
Well, this is one of the reasons we launched the iCope magazine this year, is to showcase people's work to a broader audience without them having to hop to every single site they can find. And so for our listeners out there, if you want to come and see some of Tina's work, it's going to be featured on the iCope magazine when this podcast is released as well. So if you listen to the podcast, you can go to the iCope magazine and actually look at some of her other work as well. So talk to people who want to get into this about the learning curve, because to get good at it is one thing, right? To be great at it is another. Like, do you need to be artistic? You know, what goes into the learning curve of actually accomplishing what where you're at?
I definitely think you need to have some type of artistic ability, because you need to know, you know, composition and color theory. And for learning, I probably practiced for, you know, over a year before I even accepted orders with people with special flowers. Cause, you know, I was still making mistakes, you know, I wasn't mixing correctly. So it would cause little swirls. If the temperature or humidity is wrong, you know, it's not going to cure correctly. Getting the right type of equipment helps, you know, to get rid of bubbles, and then, you know, eventually upgrading to get better molds to have, you know, better quality products. So there's definitely a learning curve, because, you know, you are creating a chemical reaction with resin, and a lot of things can go wrong. You know, there's been plenty of times I've done the dreaded flash cure before, and there's, you know, not many ways you can fix it after that. So yeah, I always encourage people, if you are interested in this, please practice a lot. And especially every flower reacts differently too with resin. You know, sometimes in, you know, like roses, there'll be like this weird bubble that comes up in the middle, and then you're fighting the stupid bubble for, you know, several days because it won't go away, you know, or different petals will react differently or move. So you have to learn, each flower is different, each mold is different, each type of item you're making, there's so many different things that you need to learn, and that only comes with experience. But yeah, I have a whole box of bad things I made in the beginning that I just laugh at. But that's how you learn. And it's definitely something that you can only learn hands-on. You can't like just watch a video and be like, oh, I know how to do it now. And there's so many people online like, oh, well, I watch YouTube videos, so I'm going to do my own wedding bouquet now. I'm like, well, have you practiced at all? You know, and they're getting cheap stuff from, you know, hobby stores. And it's like, no, please don't do that. Like, I don't want you to ruin your flowers. So yeah, definitely please practice a lot. And it's the more you do, the more you're going to learn with it, you know, cause I still make tiny mistakes, but I at least know how to fix them. So yeah, it's definitely something that you need to practice with a lot. And like I said before, there's different types of resins too. And some people are using the incorrect resins. You know, some people are using like the deep pour on the flowers and then they're burning them. So yeah, lots of little layers. Have patience.
Yeah. We mentioned earlier when we were chatting about how it isn't a paint by numbers situation. It's practice and learn the nuances.
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
And I think with all the interviews I've done with all the professionals who do this for a living, it's all the little things. And it isn't even just making sure you have a vacuum chamber or making sure you have the right heat gun or any of those tools. The tools help, but it's about understanding the process, understanding those nuances, and I've experienced this going wrong in the past and I know how to fix it this time.
Yeah. And people ask me all the time, like, well, how do you know how to fix this? I'm like, cause I've tried multiple ways and this, you know, it only comes with actually doing a hands-on working on it. So.
Right. So let's say someone wants to contact you about doing their wedding bouquet or a memorial. Talk to us through the process of engaging with a client. How do you like to work with your clients, regardless of what you're making?
So all of our process is through our website. You know, they can check out our pricing and our portfolio and kind of pick out what they want. You know, for weddings, we always want people to book in advance if possible. I'm a type A planner, so I like to, you know how many I'm getting per week. But basically, they go to our website. We have booking forms, whether it's for a wedding, a memorial, or other event, and they can book through there. And then, you know, once they pay their deposit, they can either drop off their flowers to us. Since we're in the Chicagoland area, we get probably like half local, and then the half are from all of the other different states. And they can overnight ship them to us. So then, yeah, once we get them, we go through the whole drying process. I use several different methods to dry them. And then, we send them a layout for their piece. You know, then it goes into production through resin. And yeah.
So for everyone listening, if you want to go to their website, it's bupwoodworks.com. We will have in the show notes, you'll be able to go in and see all their social media links, links to their website. But yeah, especially booking in advance when it comes to a wedding, it can't be last minute.
Yeah. I mean, we do take some last minute orders, but like I said, it's just me making everything. So I do try and limit how many I can take, and especially like summer and fall is our busiest time. So there might be some weekends where it's like, I don't even have the space to take on any more orders. I feel bad. I try to not do that ever. But yeah, definitely we encourage booking ahead of time, especially because then you can plan for things. You're not rushing at the last minute, you know, trying to get information, getting your shipping box ready and all of that. I like to plan. So hopefully these people like to plan, but we do get some last minute orders as well too, of people who didn't know about it until afterward. So
do you have a pretty regimented order structure when someone engages that I need this by this date and you need to include this, that, do you really get sort of detailed with them so they can help you get the
process definitely going? You know, in our, once they fill out a form and in our contract, I say, you know, we need flowers within like 4 days after the wedding. It depends on the flower. Sometimes we can take them a few days after that, but 1 to 4 days after your event is when we need the flowers so that they keep, you know, their shape. Otherwise they kind of like start rotting and turning brown and falling apart, and they're a lot harder to work with. We try and make it as easy as possible through our website to explain the entire process. They can kind of read through everything. The sooner we get flowers, the better. We can also work with like older dried flowers. If you dry them yourself, we can work with artificial or like those wood flowers. So lots of different options.
And do you do on wedding bouquet flowers color correction as well?
I do offer it. It's not something like I advertise a lot because I personally prefer more of the natural look. You know, I love nature, and, you know, I always say to myself, a marriage isn't perfect, so your flowers aren't going to be perfect. And you know, there may be some discoloration, but I am pretty good with the years of experience to where the flowers aren't going to be like drastically changing unless they come like severely, you know, bruised and rotten and stuff. I will suggest it to people. It's not something that I really kind of push on people. I know some companies, like, that's all they do is color correction, and that's, you know, everyone has their different preference, but I personally like to keep things as natural as possible.
So one thing I've noticed is there's a lot of these preservation companies service especially a local area, and then they service beyond that. We've had people say that, you know, they'll service as far and wide as they can, and others that are just restricted. Are you just USA and Canada? How do you handle the geography of the logistics around that?
We've had them sent from all 50 states. Hawaii and Alaska are a little trickier, but it is possible. But we have gotten a couple from Mexico, Puerto Rico, I think one of the Caribbean islands. So it is possible to do some international ones, you know, if you were in Canada or somewhere in North America. As long as you plan ahead and, you know, read through the rules, because you do have to declare things in customs, right, whether you're going to be on the plane with you or ship it. But you can usually talk to like your wedding planner or, someone in the hotel, and they can kind of help you with that if you're going to ship them to us. But it is possible. And if you can't get them to us right away, we've had a few people where we can recreate your bouquet. We can work with a florist and then, you know, have your flowers remade to be exactly like they were, and then do it that way too.
You know, you just brought up a thought, actually. I wonder how educated wedding planners are becoming with offering preservation, because obviously the preservation space is growing, right? But who knows whether this is through wedding planners or whether it's it's just ad hoc.
Yeah, I do try and network with a lot of, especially locally, the florists and planners. You know, I always try and tag them so that they are aware of our services, because yeah, a lot of people don't know about it. So once they do know about it, we have, you know, relationships with them, and they do say to their customers, or, you know, have a brochure to give to them. It's like, hey, here's a service that's, you know, offered if you want for afterwards of your wedding or whatever. But it, I think they're becoming more aware just because there's more of us out there, but it's definitely becoming a trending item lately.
Yeah. I'm still convinced that we're still, and I've seen a few reports on this, but I don't fully trust them, but I get a sense just through my years of experience in business that I think we're probably trending somewhere between 5% and 10% of the wedding market, if that, at the moment.
That's it, really? Wow.
Yeah.
There's so many people doing this too. Like, where are they all going? You know.
But that's that law of big numbers that, for a lot of my life, I was always like, it can't be. But yeah, there's just millions and millions of people. Like, you think about how many people get married each year.
That's true.
It's pretty, and how long it takes to make each piece, and then you can sort of times that by if everyone was doing it, how long would that take? And you go, wow. And then the numbers go. And that's just if you include Illinois, right? Not even whole states, or then Puerto Rico and Mexico and everywhere else. And what becomes popular in the states? I was saying earlier that you end up getting all these pieces on Etsy that Chinese companies in warehouses produce. But it then becomes something that is copied overseas as well. Like, we deal with a lot of people in Europe who are getting into flower preservation.
Yeah, I know a few people in Europe and Canada and other countries that are getting into this too. So, but yeah, we have lots of people we have people in China like stealing our photos too. That's become an issue, not just China, but some other countries. It's like, that is my photo. You know, I've had people even using photos of me in it, like my face is in it holding That's up something hysterical. And they're using it trying to sell things. And it's like,
that's brash.
Yeah. So it's like, I need to make the time to like put watermarks on everything apparently. So
add job number 9, right? Now So Tina, we talked a little in the pre-show about setting expectations, because these are handmade pieces, right? And you said you love nature, and we've interviewed others that say they airbrush everything. So how do you set expectations with clients? I know you say you have some information on the website, but do you go any further with that, with setting expectations?
Yeah, we have, you know, on our website, we have like a frequently asked questions section that they can look through and read through, where it explains what to expect. And then it's also in our contract. You know, I like to be very transparent with customers so that they know what to expect. You know, like you said, it's handmade. It's not going to be perfect. I'm going to try and make it as perfect as it can be without any major flaws. But I think posting, I like to post everyone's order on social media so that you can see what to expect. You know, if you have these types of flowers, if you have, you know, white flowers, they may not be, you know, very bright white. They might have, you know, a slight ivory color to them. You know, certain flowers dry darker or lighter depending on what they are. So I always, you know, have everything written out, what to expect. So yeah, it's just about communicating with your customer. I try and post a ton of photos on our website, on our social media, so you can zoom in, see the quality, and what to expect. You know, there's going to be maybe little bruising or, you know, color changing, but other than that, you know, it's handmade. So
I think we touched on it a little earlier, but safety wise, are you using respirators, goggles, gloves? What do you recommend when you're doing them? And, you know, what typically do you use when you're doing a preservation?
Yeah, for safety, I always make sure, you know, I have some ventilation, a few windows open. I always use an apron. I think I still have my apron that Tim sent me from like 5 years ago. that's just coated in resin. Using gloves, I use a respirator. Make sure to change the respirator cartridges because I'm so bad at doing that. Covering things with plastic so you don't damage your workspace. I always wear, not nice clothes because I've ruined plenty of clothes that way. But yeah, safety is definitely, a factor, especially if you're working out of your home like I was before. Make sure you open those windows, get good air, always use a respirator and cover yourself up, because it is a chemical reaction. And if you aren't doing it correctly and you do the flash cure, that creates heat and that can cause problems. So you definitely want to be safe with it.
So last question, and then I'd love for you to go into detail on how people can contact you. There's an enduring value that comes with the pieces that you make. And like I mentioned with our happy hour, it's just amazing. It's the talk of the town. How do you approach pricing with people, and how do you feel that they respond to the cost of a preservation? Because when I first got into this, I was like five times, or thought these things were five times more expensive than they actually are. So how do you guys deal with pricing, and then tell people how you can actually be contacted?
So for pricing, I definitely started out probably where I was just breaking even. But you're paying for experience and your artistic talent. And then, resin costs a lot. Drying sand costs a lot. To have high quality molds, those cost a lot. So you have to factor in a lot of different things. If you're spending, 30, 40 hours on one piece, you have to factor in that cost. So sometimes people are a little shocked by the pricing, but you kind of get what you pay for when it comes to this industry, because there's a lot of people starting out and I see what they're charging and I'm just like, I know that you're like not making anything. I don't know if they're just doing it to get customers maybe. But it's definitely, you get what you pay for, and you have to make it worth your time. Because I was working with, cheaper molds and cheaper materials, and you don't get a good product out of it. So I've slowly, got better equipment and kind of had to slowly raise my prices with that. And then factor in, how many hours and my experience, it's like, okay, I can charge a little more now that I'm consistently making good products. It's crazy to see what people charge out there, but we know it's an investment, but it's something that's going to be with you for a long time. And it's, your irreplaceable flower. So you want to, worth it for them.
Well, you saw in the California fires, they asked people, what did you grab? Well, your house is about to burn out. And it was memories that they grabbed, photos.
Grabbing all my photos and stuff like that. Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. Yeah, it's that enduring value. So, Tina, this has been fantastic. How can people get in touch with you, find out more about what you do, engage you in a flower preservation?
So you can check out our website. It's bupwoodworks.com. That's where you'll find all information about, our different options, our pricing, how to contact us if you're going to book a wedding memorial. I have a ton of photos on there in our portfolio. Other than that, I'm basically on all social media. I'm pretty active on Instagram and TikTok, Facebook, YouTube a little bit, Pinterest. I'm basically on everything you can think of right now. So,
well, Tina, this has been a real pleasure. And for all our listeners, again, bupwoodworks.com. Again, there'll be information in the show notes if you want more information. Tina, thank you so much for joining us today on Resin Mastery. And so, thanks. Until next time, everyone, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you again soon.